Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. Today is here in the United States. It's a, what do you call it, a bank holiday, Juneteenth. So I guess it's a federal holiday as well, which means it's nationwide. So that means federal government offices are closed. Most banks are closed. Many schools are out today. And this is Monday, July 19th, and the holiday is known as Juneteenth. What is Juneteenth for those who don't know? It's essentially the day that the slaves were freed. Now, technically and legally, they were freed 2 years prior, in 1863. But not every slave, I think in particular, in the state of Texas, correct me if I'm wrong, or update me if I'm, you know, missing anything, but just calling in so you can share with all of us. But they didn't find out until officially, I guess, until 1865. So thus Juneteenth, it's now a holiday here in the United States. Okay. Now, with that said, today's live stream podcast is titled Juneteenth Towns and Juneteenth Billionaires. So that's some of the stuff that we'll be covering today. And I think it's information that most people might not know about, but that's the whole idea of this podcast is essentially to inform people of information they didn't know, and of course, if you know anything that we don't know, because nobody knows at all, is call us up at 619-768-2945 and share with us what, you know, what you know. In any event, that's the topic for today. We're waiting for a few more people to stream on in. For today's podcast.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
Keep me wondering why, when
right. It's Juneteenth. It is a federal holiday or bank holiday, whatever you want to describe it as. Many people have the day off, but not all people have the day off. Out of the working class people, most of them do not have the day off. But nevertheless, it's a day off to many people. Now, today's podcast is titled Juneteenth Towns and Juneteenth Billionaires, and I've got some line items that I've listed on our, Blog Talk Scrolling Marquee, which is online. Anybody can access it. Just go to DIY Housing TV or It's My House, and I'll read from it today, and it's, we'll post it on our Facebook page, which is DIY Hold on, I gotta mute somebody here for a while. Okay, make it 8 hours. All right. Now Juneteenth was Let me go from Wikipedia. Let me read what they have to do, and then we're going to get into Juneteenth towns and Juneteenth billionaires. Let me find something on Wikipedia. Okay, Juneteenth, according to Wikipedia. Okay, Juneteenth, officially Juneteenth, National Independence Day, so we got sort of like two Independence Days in the United States. Juneteenth, which is today, and another one on July 4th. All right, it's a federal holiday in the United States commemorating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans, deriving its name from combining June and 19th. It is celebrated on the anniversary of the order of Major General Granger, Gordon Granger, proclaiming freedom for enslaved people in Texas on June 19, 1865, 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. Originated in Galveston, Texas, Juneteenth has since then been annually observed annually in various parts of the United States, often broadly celebrating African American culture. The day is first recognized as a federal holiday in 2021 when President Joe Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act into law. So it's also called Juneteenth National Independence Day, Jubilee Day, Emancipation Day in Texas, Freedom Day, Black Independence Day. This is reserved in the United States. Once again, it's a federal or national holiday. And let's see. The first time they had a Juneteenth celebration was June 19th, 1866. And, of course, the first time was 2 years ago on a federal way, nationally, June 19, 2021. Okay. Started by early celebrations were held by Christian churches and the Freedmen's Bureau. Okay. All right. So, and then you can read more about it on Wikipedia online. But today we're going to look at something that most people, particularly you Juneteenth historians, might not touch on. And that is, we're going to talk about or expose people to Juneteenth towns and Juneteenth billionaires. So now those are both terms I have personally coined. Let's start with the Juneteenth town. A Juneteenth town is a town that was founded on June 19th, 1865. Actually, 1865, we go from the years 1863, 1864, 1865. Today, okay, I'm going to present two to you. There might be more than two that were founded on this particular day, but I'm going to bring you what I've found so far. All right, and let's go to that. There'll be two, but you need to hear the backstory of a third town, which, you know, lays the inspiration, the groundwork for these other towns. Okay, now, this is in the program notes. The first one is Central Point, Texas. Central Point, Texas is found. It was founded on June the 19th, 1865. This is documented, all right? And then that's in Texas. And then there's Princeville, North Carolina. That was also founded on June 19th by former slaves in 1865. And then there's another town. It wasn't founded on 1865, but it's a very important town that people need to know about when it comes to what I consider Juneteenth towns. And that is Africatown, Alabama. Africatown is all one word, Alabama. So let's go with Center Point, Texas. Okay, Center Point, Texas. And now you can follow along with me. Center Point, Texas. And okay. Center Point, Texas. I hold it. There's more than one Center Point, Texas. I got to get the right one. Hold on, people. Center Point, Texas. Let's see. 1865. Okay. We want, if you're going to follow me online, you want Center Point, Camp County, Texas. There are two Center Point in Texas, but you want Center Point, Camp County, Texas. Okay? That's the Center Point, Texas that we want. And that they do have a Wikipedia page on this, too. Once again, look up Center Point, comma, Camp County, Texas. That's the one we want. I consider Center Point, hyphen, Camp County, Texas, a Juneteenth town. Let me read. You can follow along online. Center Point is an unincorporated community, settled in 1865 by freed slaves. So this group of ex-slaves, they hit the ground running. Okay. They hit the ground running. As soon as they found out, they formed their own community, town. Anyway, it is located in Camp County, in the United States state of Texas. And if you look online, it's located in northeast Texas. Okay, it is 9 miles. It is 9 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, Texas, intersection of Farm to Market Road 2057. In County Road 4275. In 1979, a recorded Texas historic landmark, you can read that on your own. Let's go with the settlement. Center Point was settled by freed slaves in 1865 as one of the freedmen's settlements that resulted from the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, let me mention something about freedmen's settlements. Online, if you type in the keywords freedmen's towns or freedmen's villages, and that's spelled F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, freedmen's, one word, or put in Freedman's Freedman's towns or Freedman's villages list, and we'll probably go through that in a moment, but you'll find a whole bunch of them. So there were Texas, probably of any of the 50 states that we have now, Texas at one point was the most, had more Freedman settlements or black townships or Negro towns, whatever you want to call them, had more than anybody else in the nation, any other state in the nation. They even dwarfed Oklahoma, which at one time had over 50, possibly even over 100. But I think at one time Texas had well over 500 of them. Anyway, that's. So the origin of settlements is said to be named, okay, we got that part. It had a population of 41 in 2000. The Center Point Baptist Church was established in 1873. The community supported a brick kiln, sawmill, and cotton gin. They also have a cemetery there, or see. A one-room schoolhouse was established in 1887 and served 31 black children during each of the 100-day school year, I guess, or term. The school, however, was initially not a very good one. Later, a school bond improvement was bought, brought the education improvement, what they needed. In 1916, a four-room building raising was the school quality to its best camp mode in Camp County. Let's see. At its peak, the school accommodated 279 students. Because of the declining community population and enrollment, the school consolidated with Pittsburgh Independent School District in 1955 and 1996. Recorded Texas Historic Landmark, or is it historic, and they have a cemetery there, and they have some notable people, too. This is all online, but in Texas, you had two Center Points, Texas. The one that you're interested in, for the sake of this conversation today, is Center Point, Camp County, Texas. That's the one that you're interested in. That was, once again, settled or founded by freed slaves in 1865, also known in Texas as Juneteenth. All right. The other Juneteenth town will be, that we're going to bring out today, is Princeville, one word, Princeville, North Carolina. All right. I consider these Juneteenth towns. Princeville is a town in Edgecombe County, North Carolina. On the town's seal, it says oldest town chartered by blacks in America. Now, they got their official charter for Princeville, North Carolina in 1885. However, 20 years prior, as I'm reading off of Wikipedia, and they do have a Wikipedia page themselves, so let's look it up, Princeville, North Carolina. Princeville, North Carolina was established in 1865 and known as Freedom Hill originally. All right. It was incorporated 20 years later in 1885 as Princeville, the first independently governed African-American community chartered in the United States. All right. Today's population of Princeville, North Carolina is 1,254 people. Princeville is part of the Rocky Mount, North Carolina Metropolitan Statistical Area. Let's see. The town is on the opposite bank of the Tar River from Tarboro, North Carolina. The city, I read that part. History, as the American Civil War reached its conclusion, Formerly enslaved African Americans sought refuge at a temporary Union encampment south of Tabarro, North Carolina, along the Tar River. These inhabitants developed their own makeshift settlement at the site and chose the name Freedom Hill in recognition of a small raised area where a Union soldier first announced the Emancipation Proclamation. In 1873, community member Turner Prince joined his companions in purchasing portions of the land used his carpentry skills to begin building permanent homes. This created the kind of radicalization topography with the black community on a swampy floodplain and white citizens on safer land above. White land owners made no effort to protest the black residents' presence, since they found the swampy terrain to be of little use and preferred to have them kept away from white residents in Tabarro. Some of the landowners eventually sold their holdings to the black residents, viewing state recognition as an important step in establishing their identity as free citizens. The community successfully petitioned the North Carolina legislature for incorporation in 1885. Despite requests to choose a name memorializing President Garfield, the new town instead called itself Princeville in honor of its founder, who was a black guy who just had, he had carpentry skills and he just started building houses. Simple as that. All right. Let's see. During the Reconstruction, the town pursued educational opportunities and worked with Henry C. Cherry, one of the first black representatives in the North Carolina legislature, to request school teachers from the American Missionary Association. Robert S. Taylor soon arrived and began service as an educator. Well, there's a whole lot to this. Okay, bottom line here, there's more to this. You can go visit the place. Bottom line is this. Here's a town that was settled, founded in 1865. That's 158 years ago. So 158 years ago, today, precisely, with no internet connection, with no smartphone, no tablets, no desktop computers, no social services office, no federal program. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton had not been born yet. The NAACP had not been formed yet. There wasn't even a thought in somebody. Well, it could have been a thought, but nobody was voicing it. In 1865, freed blacks without marching and protesting, without asking the local government, the state government, or the federal government for reparations. They did what they needed to do without violence and formed their own town. That's what I call DIY, do-it-yourself, and real reparations. Now, we did another podcast on the 31 flavors of reparations, Baskin-Robbins restoration. So whatever part of reparations you want, but I like what they did in Princeville. Some of these people couldn't even read. But we know for sure that at least two groups of former slaves in two different parts of the country in 1865, in Center Point, Texas, and in Princeville, North Carolina. They, and I call it the Civil Rights Day. Martin Luther King hadn't been born yet, neither Justin. You can sit on the left side of the table and have a victimhood mindset. You can march, you can protest, but a group of ex-slaves in two geographical locations sat on the right side of the Civil Rights table. When civil rights wasn't even a buzz term then. And they saw that this is a capitalistic country. And they formed their own town. Two of, now, there are probably more than the two I'm bringing up today. But those are two I've come up with, you know, over this past weekend. Princeville, and they're still around. Still, 158 years. Yeah, 158 years. So, you got people like they voted for a reparations bill in Evanston, Illinois, either earlier or last year. That passed. And they're working on a reparations bill in California right now. And then Asheville, North Carolina is working on. I'm going to say this, though. Whatever comes out of those reparations, and the one that did pass, which is in Evanston, Illinois right now, and you can go online and read that. I bet you none of it in Evanston, none of them got their own town. None of them got their own time, because if you study how these towns are put together, just like I had on here at the beginning of this year with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, 19 black families got together and they bought collectively 97 acres of land. They're up to 502 now. But they started with 97 acres of land collectively. Each one of the original 19 families got at least 2 acres of land each. Actually, 2 to 6 acres of land each out of 19 families. Last I checked, they're up to 502 acres. You can look it up online, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. These people, the Freedom Georgia Initiative, modeling what these people did 158 years ago, got more than their 40 acres of land. But once again, it's Baskin Robbins reparations. I'm like to go with what works, for sure. I don't have to wait on the government. In any event, but that's my opinion, let me get off that. Now, the third town, which is, I'm putting in here, is Africatown, Alabama. Now, Africatown was not established in the year of 1865 or 1863, but it's critical. And let me read about it. Africatown, and Africatown is one word. Africatown, also known as Africatown, USA, is a historic community located 3 miles north of downtown Mobile, Alabama. Okay, it was formed by a group of 32 West Africans who in 1860, okay, were bought and transported against their will to the last known illegal shipment of slaves in the United States. The Atlantic slave trade had been banned since 1808, but 110 slaves held by the Kingdom of Dahomey were smuggled into Mobile on a ship. Now, Viola Davis just did a film on this. The Woman King, The Woman King. Dahomey was an African kingdom, which you can read about them online, which is located now in what we call Benin in West Africa. They were slave traders. The Kingdom of Dahomey were African slave traders who captured what we would call today black people. They captured Africans and enslaved them and then traded them to other kingdoms within the within Africa, and they also traded them to Europeans who in turn shipped them over to the Western Hemisphere. So if you're looking for reparations, you might want to go to Benin. I'm just saying, it's food for thought. Because they were active participants and they got rich from enslaving people that looked just like them. Anyway, all right, so now I'm just a messenger here. I'm reading off of Wikipedia. Okay. So don't send no tar feather me. Anyway. So now I'm skimming through a lot of this. All right. Now, Cujo Kazula Lewis, was the founder of Africatown, and he lived until 1935, and is long thought to be the last survivor of slaves that was brought to Africatown in Alabama. Africatown, what we call Alabama. Now Africatown originally was his own independent town in Alabama. However, the city of Mobile, Alabama, annexed it. So now Africatown is just a neighborhood in Mobile, Alabama. And I wish I knew that, because the last time I was in Mobile, Alabama, which was around 2000, 1999, 2000, something like that. I wish I knew about that then, because I was right in the town. I could have passed through there, and I didn't know it. And I was through that town twice. And yeah, 1999, and I went back 2000. It was like over the Christmas holiday type thing, Christmas holiday, New Year's. I was in Mobile. That's the last time I was in Mobile, Alabama. But hopefully I'll get through there, and then I'll make it a point to visit Africatown. But at one point, and this is 5 years before the other two towns I mentioned earlier today, but it was an independent town, but the neighborhood still exists, and I think there's about 14,000 people living there today. And it started, Cujo Lewis, and Lewis is his Americanized last name. Cujo Lewis, a former enslaved person, and he was actually enslaved in Africa originally. He was enslaved in the motherland, was on that long voyage ship, and he survived. I mean, can you imagine the resilience of this guy? And the resilience of his DNA, he survived that voyage. He is being chained in the bottom of that ship, defecating on himself, laying next to people to the left of him, to the right of him, defecating, urinating on themselves, getting to the deck, they hosing him off. He could have saw some people jump overboard because they couldn't take it anymore. Imagine what kind of mental constitution
that Cujo Lewis had to stick it out. He made it over here. He had to learn a new language. He was probably learning languages on that ship as well, because a lot of those people that they captured spoke different languages, indigenous African languages. So he had to pick up another new language to survive. And then some kind of way, they said, well, it doesn't look like we're going to make it back. Let's form our own town. Next time you're in Mobile, go to Africatown. Check it out. So, that concludes the Juneteenth Town version of this rant. Now, the other part of this title today is Juneteenth Billionaires. During slavery, there were probably at its peak 4,000 former slaves who became plantation owners themselves. I'll repeat that. During slavery, before it was abolished in 1863, at its peak, there was at least 4,000 plus former slaves that became plantation owners themselves. Now, some of you might be saying, well, you know, 4,000 isn't a whole lot of people. Well, you know, it's all relative to what. And it's all relative to what they do. So let's look up, because I put on here Juneteenth billionaires. So follow along with me. How many billionaires are in the world right now? Let's get that number. Number of billionaires on the globe right now. How many billionaires on planet Earth? Now, according to Forbes, there are 2,640 billionaires on planet Earth. Right now, in 2023. So if we go back to June 18th, 1863. Let's say there were at least 4,000. I mean, we already know there were 4,000 former slaves that were plantation owners. Now, out of that, over a series of a number of years, actually, because this goes back to colonial time, people like Paul Cuffee, who was a wealthy black shipbuilder in New England, he helped form the nation of what we call today Sierra Leone. He took over with him on that voyage, the first voyage, 39 people, and they bought millions of acres of land. Poor people don't do that. This is colonial times, mind you. Paul Cuffee, look him up, C-U-F-F-E-E. He didn't have a smartphone like everybody on. Put it this way, everybody that's listening to this podcast, you got an internet connection. Whether you got a smartphone, desktop, laptop, flip phone, whatever you got, but you got an internet connection. He didn't have that. He didn't have any help from the government on a local, state, or federal level. Of other people went over and helped form. Look it up online. Look how big Sierra Leone is. Some years later, on another back to Africa trip. Now look up this online too. Republic of Africa. Some formerly freed slaves out of the state of Maryland got their resources together, chartered a boat, went over and bought some land And now that is known as Festival Back to Africa trip. Let's see, hold on, the Republic of Maryland. And with the Republic of Maryland, and connected to the Republic of Maryland, was, all right, that's Maryland people. And then there was another group, look up Mississippi in Africa, the largest group of former slaves that got together to practice cooperative economics. It was 300 of them, just 300, not a million, because we've had 2 million man marches. But 300 former slaves got together without an internet connection, without any help from the local, state, or federal governments of the United States. Some of them could not read. Most of them had no college education, if any at all. And these 300 people went over to West Africa, and they bought 2 million acres of land, which they still hold today. Look up Maryland County, Liberia, and also look up Greenville. There's a Greenville, Mississippi, and a Greenville, Liberia. The connection between the two is blood related. Once again, look up Greenville, Mississippi, and then Greenville, Liberia. Greenville, Liberia was named after Greenville, Mississippi, where the largest concentration of blacks, to my knowledge, and it's documented, 300 former slaves got there, and slavery wasn't even abolished when they did this. Slavery was still in motion. And they went over to Africa and bought 2 million acres of land. Today it's known as Maryland County or Greenville, Liberia. We need to do a road trip there for that. Anyway. All right. Well, there you have it. All Juneteenth information. Hopefully it'll be an inspiration to people. And tomorrow we'll pick back up on our tiny towns, which is smaller than these towns I just mentioned today. But it is Juneteenth, so I needed to do something to recognize the importance of this day. And hopefully, and here's the thing about Africatown in particular. Africatown started out with just 2 acres, just 2 acres of land. Anybody within the sound of my voice, if you look in the right places, you can afford to buy 2 acres of land. If you can't afford to do it out of your pocket, now, these are slaves now. Cujo Lewis had to get together with some other former slaves. Because everybody listening to this podcast can read. I'm sure a significant portion of you have college degrees. All of us have internet connections. So if Cujo Lewis, if he can these things for post-traumatic slave syndrome. So if this guy, Cujo Lewis, look him up, Cujo Lewis, Africatown, Alabama. Look him up. He's got a whole Wikipedia page on himself. If he can overcome being captured in Africa, enslaved in Africa, of his religion, in Africa, stripped of his language in Africa, loaded on to a slave ship in Africa, then had to, God knows what they ate. But I guess when you get hungry enough, you'll eat almost anything, which he ate. And laying in his own filth and feces on the daily, laying next to other people's filth and excrement on the daily. During that long slave ship, darkened, and the mental constitution, the spiritual constitution, the physical resilience, the overall resilience, gets through all that, then comes to a new land that he does not know and has to learn the new land. He went through some trauma. I don't know nobody in 2023 that has trauma. Not like that. I'll put it that way. All right. So if I would qualify him as having, but despite his alleged post-traumatic slave syndrome, despite that, he had enough mental and spiritual constitution where he started a town that still exists today. Africa Town, Alabama, which is now a part of Mobile, Alabama, because, you know, the city of Alabama annexed it. But on that 2 acres, there are 14,000 people. That's 163 years ago that Cujo Lewis founded that town. Oh, excuse me. No, 158, but he was there earlier than that. 158 years, but he was in earlier than that. So anyway, I consider him a person that he got his reparations by starting his own town. Him and others, but he's credited as being the founder. All right. Anyway, so that's my rant for what do you call it, Juneteenth. Oh, let me get back to. So there were. I measure wealth differently than Forbes magazine and than most people. I measure wealth by social capital. That's people. What kind of social relationships do you have, and how many, and how can you convert them into wealth? And then natural resources. So I'm equating that these 4,000 black folks that were formerly slaves, I consider them Juneteenth billionaires, because when you consider they had control of at least 19 million acres of land. So let's take a look at that. Let's whip out our calculators again. We're working on the Juneteenth billionaires. 19 million acres. Let's put that on our calculators, okay? 19 million acres of land. That's a lot of land. Now, an acre equals 43,560 square feet. So let's multiply 19 million times 43,560 square feet, and you've got 827,640,000,000 square feet of land. Now, let's look at the natural resources. You got over 8 billion square feet of topsoil. You can grow stuff in that. You got over 827 billion below the surface acres of groundwater. Now, because if we start adding dollar values to this, you'll get into the trillions. But we're just going by the $827 billion right now. So some of these people probably don't, we don't know. It was varying amounts. If you're looking, if you happen to be a black American or whatever, look up your family tree. I'm sure there's somebody up your family tree that had a few acres of land. I mean, we had, what, Reavon here, you know, last week, and her family, the Booth family, settlement in Mississippi, 300 acres there. On my mother's side of the family in Louisiana, 88 acres there. So before you start marching and protesting and seeking out reparations from the federal government or the city government or whatever, look up your family tree and see what kind of reparations your family has already been blessed with, but your family has yet to develop. What's that parable on the talents? You know, person who had three talents, the other one had maybe two, and they did some of the talents that they were blessed with. And then the person, they had some talents, but they didn't develop their talents. They hoarded them. See, if you're sitting within a family right now in 2023 and in your family, and you know this, not if you don't know, you don't know. If you're sitting in the family that your family has been blessed with, it doesn't have to be acres of land, but something. It could be a sewing machine. And you have been blessed with untapped reparations. Most people might call it an inheritance. Then you really don't need to be, you know, anybody in California, any of those people working on reparations in California, and your family has 40 acres somewhere in California or elsewhere on the planet, and you have not sat down with your blood-related family and say, look, let's develop this 40 acres or this sewing machine or this cupcake. And I'm not being facetious when I say cupcake because my regular listeners know the story that we share about Mignon Francois. She took her grandmother's cupcake recipe and turned it into millions. She's a black woman. That's what I call do-it-yourself reparations. There's over 31 flavors of it. There's probably over 31 million flavors of it because we all have different situations. But it goes back to the parable of the talents. If you haven't developed what you already have, you're not going to get more. Right now, I'm dealing with 14, 15 acres plus some other stuff. Right now, I'm just trying to get a handle on four acres of it. Start with 1 acre. And I'm doing it by myself because I'm going to have to share it with some people. But the core original acres, I got by myself because I didn't want no squabbling. I didn't want no hemming and hawing. I didn't want no voting. When I'm ready to move, I can move without making phone calls, votes, and potential animosity and all this, that, or other. All right. But now I'm getting to the point where I need to organize a wolf pack to move. That's where I'm at now. But it's taken me 7-8 years to get to that point. But still, that's how I'm slowly developing that talent that I've been blessed with. Everybody listening, I'm sure if you look in your family tree somewhere, and you have to look far, you have been blessed, your family has been blessed with some type of reparations, some kind of way. It might not be tangible. It could be an idea. Mignon Francois, black woman, Mignon Francois was blessed, the talent that she was blessed with, the talent that turned back the electricity on in her house, the talent that turned the water back on her house. And once again, she was a mother of 7-8 kids with no electricity and no water in house. And she was in the process of losing her house to foreclosure. The talent that got the water, the lights, and got the house out of foreclosure was her grandmother's recipe. Her reparations was grandma's recipe. That was the talent. And everybody, I mean everybody who's listening, you might not know it. You might not recognize it. Everybody has got a talent that can get them out of Schitt's Creek. But you got to recognize it and you got to use it. Well, that's my rant for the day. Anyway. All right, let me go back to the studio here. I don't know if anybody's listening. All right, well, but going back to the Juneteenth billionaires. So, yeah, if we over 827 billion 640 million square feet of land, and if we started adding a dollar value to it, okay. Let's just say selling a liter of water, but we're gonna get into the trillions, man. I've said this in the past. And this goes out particularly for black Americans. Stop, you know, actually for anybody. And I'm related to a current relevant basketball star, Steph Curry. Steph Curry, one of the most prolific shooters in the history of the National Basketball Association. And him and his dad were talking about, you know, contract negotiations, and it got to the subject of money. So Steph said to his dad, but what about so-and-so? I'm the leading scorer in the league, but so-and-so, he doesn't score as many points as I do, but he makes more money than I do. And Steph Curry's dad stopped him in his track and said, don't count another man's money. Just worry about, you know, don't count another man's money. So I'm saying this as a black person to all black people that might be listening to this. I know some will get mad, particularly when it comes to this matter of reparations. Stop counting white folks' money. Stop looking at PM's money or Exxon Mobil's money or Donald Trump's money or Jeff Bezos' money. Stop counting the people out there in California going for reparations. Stop counting white folks' money. Look at your family tree. And like Francois Mignon, black woman, she took her grandmother's recipe and her last $5 and she used it. She tapped in on that reparation. She tapped in on that bit of, what do you call it, inheritance. And she turned it into $60 that day. Then she turned it into $600 that week. She was able to get, once again, the lights cut back on, the water cut back on. Eventually she got the property out of foreclosure. She still owns it to this day. The family still runs their cupcake business out of it. She took the $5 and turned it into over $10 million. Her grandmother's recipe. That's what I call reparations. It's one of the 31 flavors, but it's valid. Stop counting other people's money. Because you can't count somebody else's money and count your own at the same time. You can't do it. Or at least that's my opinion. Anyway, okay. So, for the Juneteenth billionaires, there could be a Juneteenth billionaire or two, three, four, five that are listening to this, and I hope they are. But start within your own family. Once again, it could be as something as simple as a bread pudding recipe, a barbecue chicken recipe. Somebody could have left behind a sewing machine that hasn't been used in 30 years. It could be there's somebody that listens to this program on occasion. The house that they're living in right now, a tiny house, it used to be a shed. Now it's a pimped out, stylish, trendy, tiny house. Every last person that's ever listened, that will listen to this podcast, or listen to this podcast now, or ever will, you've got talents. If you're hurting for any type of sustainability, financial sustainability, get quiet and think. Because trust, I guarantee you, everybody has got a talent, at least one, that they haven't recognized and tapped into that can make them billions, if not millions. And these Juneteenth billionaires, a lot, they had their wealth in natural resources and human capital. Now, there's more than that, but we'll have to cover that on another podcast, which we will. And we'll title that one. We could probably do it this week, Juneteenth Billionaires. And I'll just break it down in simple elementary school arithmetic on how this, you know. But once again, an acre, 43,560 square feet, anywhere on the planet, anywhere in the universe, that's what an acre is. But look in your family, that's the first place to look. Okay. All right. Other than that, it's open mic. If you guys, I got to go back to the studio because I don't even know if anybody's there. But press one if you got any comments. You don't have to talk about Juneteenth, or you can if you want to, or give any commentary that you want to. Open mic. If not, then we'll cut knock off early for the day. And I'm slowly going back to my studio now. The phone is repopulating the studio. Okay. Woo. We got some hands up. Part my rant. So let's go to 773. Your mic is open. Happy Juneteenth.
Hi. Jimmy?
Yes, sir.
Hello. So I appreciate what so much you did tomorrow. I didn't get it 1%, but that was awesome what you shared, stuff I never heard or nobody probably knew. But that's so valuable information that you share. I mean, I hope you do a repeat or play it again or something. This is just very awesome what you did. So thank you so much for that. And it's amazing you made observation how that what people didn't have back then about the cell phone, the education, but yet they got results if you work together.
Delmar, you shared it.
Sometimes that's easy.
Okay. Yeah, Delmar, you shared with some information this week, which we'll put out there this week, because the information that you shared with me about 3 or 4 hours ago, it deserves its own podcast. So, and then you have your own podcast, which is into the archives. Hey, Dama, what's the name of that podcast again they can listen to on Blog Talk?
I'm not sure it's still up, but I just think I have a stroke. I haven't kept it up.
No, if you recorded it's still on there. Yeah, it's
okay.
Still on there. Yeah. Once you record it, it stays on there for a number of years.
Oh, okay.
So, well, I tell you what, Buck, I'll look that up and I'll announce to people. But yeah, thank you, Delmar, for calling. He Delmar is my contact to Pleasant Stephens, and he has a podcast. He had a major health concern, which he's from beautifully. So we will we'll have him back on, and then I'll announce his because he's archived all his shows on Blog Talk. So let's go to next caller, 309 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, Delmar in L.A. It's Chris here.
Good morning, Chris.
For some reason, I have to call you in from another phone number, so mine don't want to call you no more. I have to figure that out. But that's Jimmy King.
I think there's another number I can probably patch into. I'll call you later today or late by tomorrow morning on that.
Okay.
Which wouldn't cost you any money.
Awesome. Yeah, it for some reason it just stopped altogether. It won't even let me try to call. So I have to get on another phone. But people got to do things that you know you don't know whether you found your niche, your specialty, your purpose, your amazing superpower. You know, you mentioned that. You know, everybody's got one. It's just whether you find it.
That's true.
But, you know, I've learned how to recycle material, and I stepped down to do some of that just so I can live, and I wound up slipping. And I slipped. My head was about at 10 foot tall, somewhere around there, 8 foot, uh-huh. I guess around 8 to 10. Yeah, I slipped and I wound up falling into the splits. I pulled a hamstring on my left leg and hyped my knee backwards. And my right leg, I landed dead on my knee, but it caused a serious problem here this weekend. So, you know, I went through some things, you know, this past 6 months. It's been unreal. You know, losing my son in December, turn around about 2 weeks ago, losing my mentor 2 weeks ago as well. About a month, I guess. You know. And, you know, you got Father's Day, you got Juneteenth, you got everybody in the world and everything that's on their minds and what they're out there doing. And I was sitting here last night, and it was pretty overwhelming, you know, the reality. My brother couldn't get up, and I couldn't help him. I almost ripped him in half trying.
Okay.
And he died on me, right? And then I turned around. I can't get up, but I'm feeling what he felt, where I cannot pull myself to stand. That was that's been a reality check, you know. So all the attention will go through, because one of these days you might be going through it, and if you can help them, you would want to be helped as well.
True.
I get a lot of dose of realities this weekend, but I'm sitting here trying to just will my health back together with my legs so I can walk. You know, and we need people to realize that just because I can't walk doesn't mean I can't talk.
That's true.
And so here I am. I'm on the radio, you know, and my phone ain't let me do that. I've had many days now. I mean, there's a reason why I haven't been on your show, bro. It's because my phone said no. Now, I ain't had a problem up until that day, but now I've got to find a way. So here I am, and I made it today, so I'm happy.
Well, I'll check with Robin. There's a way you can call online, and then there's another when I call you, like, for later today or tomorrow morning, there's another number that you can call. I like what you're saying is you're demonstrating resilience. So if you can't do it one way, you figure out another way to do it.
That's so, right. Don't stop.
And your health. I've had some wake up calls lately. I had two guys that I knew in high school within the last month and a half, they dropped dead, man. They were like both 63 years old. And I was taking a look at their lifestyles. Now, there was another person that within those two, there was another person that on the day she was buried, one of them died, passed on too. This one of the 6-year-olds died. She was 103. So I took a look at, okay, all right, I saw how those two guys lived. And they had, it seemed to be a toxic lifestyle. But her lifestyle was the polar opposite of theirs. I mean, she watched what she ate, you know, kept active, you know, on a regular basis. And she made it up to 103 years old. Didn't smoke or drink or none of that kind of stuff. So, I look at them as three wake-up calls. Right? Sorry, let me be more active. I don't have because I don't smoke. I don't smoke anything at all. And then I'm the last time I took a drink of alcohol was probably about 4 years ago. That's the last time I had a mixed drink. Oh, and then, all right, no. The last time I had alcohol, every holiday season from November to the end of December, I do an eggnog, and I like it spiked with rum. But that's about it for me. That's about it with me. So, yeah, and they only sell that, you know, I typically buy store-bought stuff, so that, you know, they only sell it once a year. Yeah, but in your condition, all I can say is do whatever you need to do to rest up and don't try to force yourself. You know, just listen to your body and, go to the doctor, what have you. And you'll bounce back. You might be bounced back by Friday. Who knows?
That's what I'm hoping for here.
I had a friend of mine who, he had a sciatica problem. And, he's back to normal now. He whipped it in probably about a couple of weeks. I understand those sciatica things hurt, so.
Man,
but now he's back to normal now, buddy.
Yeah,
and he turned it around in about a couple of weeks.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, bro. I was just going to say sciatica.
Yeah, no problem.
It comes down now. It depends. It comes down to a pinch. So,
right.
And that's just body moves. I've got the same problem with that, and I'm funny because I can only bend over to the ground about 25 times in a day. If I do it any more than that, you will hear me bend over because I will go,
ow. It reminds me of the time I was picking up a 4-year-old, you know, just playing, you know, horse around, and, man, I pulled something in my back. Because they didn't weigh that much, but, man, I was in pain. My mother was living there. I had to call her up, and she told me to get some dome pills. I got some dome pills, and that cured it up for several hours. And then by the end of the week, I never had to go to the doctor. It was just I put a hot water bottle on that, you know, where the pain was when I wasn't taking the dome pills, and I guess that heat. So within about, I'd say 3-4 days, I was back to normal. But, man, that whatever I pulled, it was, and I was surprised at it because it, I was lifting up this little 4-year-old, and I doubt they weighed 100 pounds. But, anyway, so bounce back from that. Hold on, Chris, while we go to the next caller here. 111.
Yes, this is Brother Warren, host of New Orleans Wake Up. How you doing, L.A.?
Fine. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. I just wanted to just make some remarks on your discussion that I enjoyed. I do think you trivialize the word reparations and kind of take it out of its context there. But let's look at land ownership among African Americans since the end of enslavement.
All right.
We know now that you have black farmers who are probably the last group of blacks that have large parcels of land that are under attack by local sheriffs and tax assessors and having their land confiscated. I'm very familiar with those cases. In fact, I've done several shows on that. I have air property on both from my mom and my dad's side. And if you know, New Orleans is on the Mississippi River. And so when you go up the Mississippi River from New Orleans, they call that the River Road. The River Road would be from Kenner, going all the way up to before Baton Rouge on both sides of the river, west and east bank. A lot of black people have property that their folks bought after slavery, but that property is being taken away by large corporations such as the oil and gas industry that are coming into those areas. In fact, there's one parish where we have air property. The parish officials have rezoned those areas for large commercial because they expect to get people's land. So,
right.
I'm looking at an article right now in Alexandria, Louisiana, how this sheriff receives zero tax bill, his mom. So what I'm saying, these white folks in these little small towns are running these little small towns and counties and parishes with iron fists, actually taking black people's land. And so we should analyze how could we go from approximately 20 million acres of land over 100 years ago to probably less than 2 million acres of land. What dynamics have been at play? And so then we talk about the concept of reparations, how to repair that damage that's been done of land loss.
Right. And you know what? I'm going to go to the archives and listen to some of those stuff. You know what? The last time I called in the show was maybe 3 weeks ago or whatever. But I guess I called in too late because you picked up some calls, but I didn't get through. But anyway, I want to have you on as a guest because in Louisiana, like on my mother's side of the family,
mm-hmm.
There's 88 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
In Hummer, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have enough family political clout to really bring it up. And then when my mother was alive, but it's we got family members living on it. I don't know who they are. I do know family members who do know. But they're, you know, from the city of New Orleans itself and maybe the whole state, I think there's an information void there that, I'll give an example. There are people that will call you up if the back taxes are due on their property in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
From, but they want you to sell it so they can make a commission on it.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to see is information out there put out to these families where on these are the steps you need to take in order to save the property and keep it in the family. I haven't run into anybody who does that yet.
Here's what you have. You know, in Louisiana, the inheritance law is different than the rest of the country. You have to have a succession and everybody gets a piece of that. Now, what had happened in these families, black people had to leave the South because they lived in very repressive environments. They wanted to leave these farms and the sharecropping deal. So they went up north. They went Midwest. They went out west. And so some of the land was sold, and then some of the land that was left with families living there wasn't legally the process to say the ownership. So white folks come in and they take the property. They actually, let me tell you what they do. They actually go to these courthouses. They look through all this property. They find the names that are listed as those who pay the taxes, and they do a genealogical search on those people. They actually sit down. They create a family tree. They Google obituaries. And by the time somebody called you, they know your family tree already because they've done that research. So we right. do need information about how this process works. But, you know, many of these small areas, sometimes nobody's there anymore. Nobody's living in some of these areas anymore. People are all gone. And it's just the land there. Right. And when you have corporations like oil and gas companies want to come in, because on one set of property, we, and I say we because I have to own it with my brothers and sisters and my cousins, we have a barge company that pay us rent for parking the barge right there, because along that river road, your parcels of land are cut out this way. From the river across the levee all the way across the road, and that's how the parcels of land. So we have land that goes to the river, and the land between the river and the levee is called a batcher. In other words, when you get on the levee, the river is not right there. There's some land there, and you walk several yards or feet before you actually get to the river. And so, but the older people who, you know, they've died out, and it's a lot of issues with the land. But the point I want to make is there is land theft. There is people's land are being taken away, and fraudulent things are happening, and that's what should be addressed.
I agree. Like, I'm going to call you off air. I think I got you in my old phone. You're not in this phone. But you got a show today, Warren?
No, I don't have a show. I don't have a show today, but what you could do is send me an email. I'll give you my email address. Just send me an email and we can communicate.
Hold on,
and
hold on,
call
hold on. Okay, Warren, you there? Okay, oh man, I got booted out. Okay, I'm trying to get the studio back up on my phone. Let's see. Warren, if you can hear me, text me at 425-520-0605. That's once again, if you can hear me, text me your email address or what have you at 425-520-0605. And I'm trying to get, my phone is not allowing me to. Now let's see if I can reboot and see if that'll help. Okay, I've been booted out two times. I don't know if anybody can hear me. Warren, are you still there? trying to get back into my Blog Talk studio. So let's see if three times is a charm. We must be hitting on a hot topic here, which will cover how families can save their homes. Let's see. All right. Okay, well, come on. It's buffering slowly. We're making progress here. I know it kicked me out three times. I don't know if anybody can hear me. And it's slowly buffering, loading back on my phone. Okay. Let's see. All right, let's try it.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Horn, you there? Now I can hear you. Man, I got booted out three times.
Wow.
And then the rest of the audience, apparently you're the only survivor. I had quite a few people with their hands up, but you're the only one that is here. Give me your email address.
All right, so it's going to be NOLAWAKEUP, NOLA Wake Up, NOLAWAKEUP at gmail.com. Yeah, NOLA Wake Up at gmail.com. Yeah.
All right, I'll send you an email today. Let me ask you this, because this one person that had called me months ago, last year or whatever, and I even asked my cousin, she goes to church every Sunday. I said, mm-hmm. Then was the third person. I said, do any of your churches, I even called one of the local radio stations, the Black Gospel Station, and I told the five people, do you know of any ministry or any outreach that caters to people that might have a problem with, you know, air property or paying the back tax like that? And I've only talked to five people. That's not many. But they all said no. So
let me give you a name of a person that would be an excellent guest for you that deals with a lot of that. She's lived in New Orleans, but now she lives in a place called Kentwood, Louisiana. She's a well-known genealogist. Let me give you her name. Her name is Antoinette Harrell. Antoinette Harrell. Her YouTube channel is called Nurturing Our Roots, and she deals a lot with land. Yeah, Nurturing Our Roots. That's her YouTube channel, and I'm going to get her number for you. And she goes into those courthouses. She deals. She won a Nobel Peace Prize. She's even done she's even made a documentary on peonage, on after slavery, how many blacks were still stuck on these plantations all the way up to the 1960s in peonage debt. And she interviewed families who told their stories about how, like, you see, like in the Delta of Mississippi, see, some of those plantations are way off the beaten track, bro. When you off the road, you're in another world. And she interviewed families that were literally kept on those places in all the way to the 1960s. The sheriff, all of them were related. I mean, so she's done that. She does stuff with property and land. And going to the courthouses. So our specialty is going to those courthouses. But in your family land, find out, get the deed. Find out the deed and see who's paying the taxes today on that land. And
that land, if it has not gone through legal succession, like much of the land people don't take care of that kind of business here, then you still would have a stake into that. You and your people still have a stake into that property.
Right. Right. Well, I figure not only in Louisiana, but nationwide, that is an information abyss that for some reason black folks, D.C. has been gentrified. And I think a big part of that is that we were just never schooled within the family and or the black church on how to keep up with those property taxes and what is estate planning and
we were trying to survive, bro. See, first thing, you needed a job. You needed a job. So you had to leave these little southern areas. You had this industrialization up north in Chicago and Pittsburgh and Gary, Indiana, and them places in the Midwest. Then you had California, and we were leaving going to get these jobs. And so we kind of walked away from some of this land that we did have after. But then what could you do with the land? I mean, the white folk wouldn't let you participate economically, competitively and stuff. So we were just trying to survive all the way, not still trying to survive. Look at that black couple in Colorado that had a ranch. You familiar with that story? The black couple in Colorado, I think it was, with a ranch.
Yep.
And
yep,
they were harassing them.
They were harassing them.
And then put him in jail and all that. So you'd be surprised how a lot of this stuff happens in these parishes and counties where white folk run with the iron fist. And it's only because it gets out in the news stories or social media, people are knowing a little bit more about it. I did a lot of shows on black. In fact, if you go through my archives, you see a lot of shows I did on black farmers. And they talk about all the shenanigans that's been done to take their farm, to take their land. They had this one old guy, he dead now in Kentucky. He paid his property off, had it all deed paid for, then went and took it anyway. It's unbelievable some of the stuff that
I know. I interviewed a young lady some years ago, I think it was the first 6 months I was doing this podcast, about 9 years ago, and her grandfather, great grandfather, rather. I forgot what state he was in. I had to look in the archives. But he had like 600 acres of land. He had a school on the plantation. Well, he had a plantation, 600 acres. He had it going on. And he usually would go into town with two people with him. And they were typically armed. But one day he went into town unarmed and by himself. And they caught him. That's the one time they caught him. And they killed him, and then they went back to the plantation and told his people, if you're not off the land by sundown, we're going to do the same to you. That happened to a lot of people that way.
A lot of these lynchings, a significant amount of them, I don't know what percentage was about because the blacks refused to sell a land. And
right.
they use this terror to purge them. And but today it's a situation. You got three things. You got number one, many people don't know the value of having the land. Number two,
right.
the families are not together. There's dispute. There's a situation right now. A set of inherited property. That's a mess right there. You got a lot of it is dealing with a lot of the family drama and disagreement. And I was in years ago in the 80s, I was with a neighbor at his hometown in Mississippi, and I was in the car driving with him, so we passed by his funeral. We didn't go in the funeral because people was outside, so he knew the people. And then we were leaving, he said you know why that guy died? I said, how that guy died? Him and his sister got into it over the land, and she shot at him. He shot at. She shot him and killed him. So you have family dispute. You have family disputes over land. You have, but still, people don't. We just don't have the vision that we can create communities as we used to have because of all of the options. You see, the options we have more today than what we had before. And then that creates a right. dilemma for people who are trying to sell the vision. Hey, we can do this with this land. We can have a little community here. I mean, you know, and people can't see themselves creating a community when they can buy a house in a nice subdivision or a suburban community outside of Atlanta. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, and well, then also along the river road from New Orleans, it's not a good place to live because of the refineries and the factories. They call that Cancer Alley, by the way. So
okay.
there's no intention for us to ever build back in that area where we do have property along that river road because environmentally it's just not safe. You see?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, is New Orleans beginning to be a place for the wealthy? Because I imagine like any other urbanized city in the United States, the price of housing has dramatically gone up in the last few years.
And rent for apartments have gone up. You know, in New Orleans, if you're familiar with it, you know, we have these shotgun Creole cottages that kind of dot the inner city landscape at one time. We still have those. And
right.
many black people, particularly in the downtown area of the city, we call it the Seventh Ward. Have you ever heard of an area called Treme? You heard of Treme area in New Orleans?
Yeah, I've heard of it,
that's not too far from the French Quarter area. Well, a lot of those Creole shotgun houses, black people own those things, okay? And so then by the time you have blacks begin to move to the suburbs and then the crack epidemic comes in the 80s and 90s, these houses just look like there's no future. So a lot of blacks walked away. Man, them white folk came in there, bought up these shotgun Creole cottages, man. Them suckers are appraised now for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. And a lot of blacks let that go. They had it, you know, they sold it. They had that in their family,
right. But
they sold it in those
yeah,
Creole cottages.
A lot of the younger generation. Hey, a lot of the younger generations who don't know the history and don't know value. You know what the thing is? Once they sell those houses, they really don't make enough to get back to stay in the city.
No, well, you see, what happens with particularly with the older people on fixed income, once an area is targeted for gentrification, the tax bill goes up. And then when the tax bill goes up, they're not able to afford it, and then they lose it. And so these areas outside the French Quarter are being heavily gentrified to where you don't really recognize those areas too much anymore because all the people that have come in from outside have moved in, and the shotgun house is a perfect example of what a lot of blacks own those shotgun houses, and they sold them, moving to better neighborhoods and bigger homes.
Right.
But those double shotgun houses probably are appraised now, in this area at $300,000, $400,000, possibly $500,000. And that was stuff they owned. The black people had owned those. It was in their families. Some of those families had that since even before slavery because, you know, we had a large free black population in New Orleans. And so some of those black families had that property in their families even during slavery or right after slavery. They had those things. But then again, we wanted something, quote-unquote, better. So who wants to stay in a shotgun double in a crime-infested crack area? That's common sense, right?
Right.
But we're not able to envision creating something different. White people are able to do that because they hold all the purse strings. They have the financing, insurance companies. They are the appraisers. Most times they are the tax assessors. And so they can, create something from a vision that they have.
Right.
We tend to go where something is already done and prepared.
Right. Yeah, a lot of us, I got a friend of mine right now and she's looking for a turnkey situation, which a lot of people do. But yeah, I'm a pioneer, man. I just, you know what, give me the dirt and I'll build it myself.
We had that. African-American people had that pioneering spirit. And you always talk about that. You always highlight that, this pioneering spirit that we have. But one of the things, when you fight for equality and you fight for freedom, you want to enjoy what the other people have that you've been denied. So you want to move in that suburb. You want to go way out there. You know what I'm saying? So that's just something that people have made the choice to do. So therefore, we never really understood the strategy of land as a collective group. The old people understood. Now, the people coming out of slavery understood the purpose of the strategic purpose of land, you see. But, you know, when your choices are more available now than ever before, hell, we're going to overdose at the buffet. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're going to pick everything. We're going to go to what is that, Golden Corral? You familiar with Golden Corral?
I'm familiar with them. You got everything. Everything looks delicious at Golden Corral.
Yeah. We just going to overdose on it.
You got all kinds of entrees that look good. You can't eat them all, but they're there.
We're going to walk away from the rice and gravy because we tired of eating rice and gravy. So we want to go to that buffet. So that's kind of like what it is with choosing which property to buy, buy property.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess cause a lot of people who left the mule and the 40 acres behind. Well, I got some family members that they were in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. They left that behind and went to Detroit and Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, just like you said, they were tired of, you know, one particular scene, and they went up north.
And you could talk to some family members, you know, families that were sharecroppers. You might talk to brothers and sisters in their 90s. A brother may speak of that time with fond memories. The sister may don't want to remember it and don't want to talk about it and don't want – and you see, you have that. Those experiences for some people were just bad. What Tina Turner was – Tina Turner was a sharecropper. She picked cotton, right? So where what she became by the time of her death, she doesn't want to return to the sharecropping.
She was a long way from Nutbush city limits. She was in Switzerland and didn't look back.
So a lot of people have that attitude about things there, but it's important, I think, that large African American congregations, Prince Hall, they should be buying up large tracts of lands in these cities. There are cases. You have Abyssinia Baptist Church in Harlem has bought up several blocks. This pastor that died, Reverend Leon Sullivan, he from Philadelphia, his church had bought up. So there are cases where the churches have purchased several blocks and have housing and so on and so forth. And you might want to do a show on that, look at that. Because I think too often we emphasize the negative. A lot of our young people are doing some extraordinary things, graduating, and we don't put enough emphasis on that. There are two black girls from New Orleans.
I did a show on. Are you familiar with Freedom Georgia, the Freedom Georgia Initiative? I like to see more of that going on, actually.
Yeah, and you do know that after slavery, a lot of black people created what they call free towns. In fact, there are some towns named Freetown. You have them in Louisiana, not too far from New Orleans. But I think there are several places that were called Freetown. And some were called Freetown unofficially, meaning it's not registered on the map as Freetown, but it referred to Freetown. These basically were just black people creating communities after enslavement. And they call them Freetowns.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I've done some Freedom Villages thing, but I'll do more on that because I haven't found it. That's the thing I like, is like Blackjack, Oklahoma, man, I've been in that place 5 or 6 times. Censusboro, but you won't find them online, though. But in person, they're there.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I
imagine New Orleans
has
probably got a bunch of towns like that.
I don't think it's a bunch. No, I don't think it's a bunch. I think it's a few communities. And in that town,
right,
there are communities, which might be a lane. You know, they call a lane the
right
street in the rural area. No, no, I don't know. There are nothing. There was no – I can't think of any. Now, are you familiar with the Matoya family from Natchitoches?
No, I'm not.
Oh, the Matoya family is an interesting family. These were free blacks, and it started with a woman named Quen Quen. That was her name. Her parents were from Africa, and she had been enslaved, and she had children from this white guy. And so her children become what you call mulattoes, right?
Right.
But they're still legally black, but they own this land in Natchitoches, and she's like the matriarch. No,
in
Louisiana, Natchitoches, Louisiana, above Alexandria.
Okay.
The parish is called. Here goes the point about this family: they own plantations, they own some enslaved blacks, but they're still not white. They're still discriminated against. So what Marie Matoya does, she builds a Catholic church for the black people.
Right.
And when the whites come in, the whites got to sit in the back.
Okay.
But the Matoya family, now these were the blacks who were free blacks during slavery who had some sort of wealth. And Louisiana had the free blacks with the most amount of wealth. Virginia had a lot of free blacks, but Louisiana had the free blacks that had what you call wealth. And so, of course, they were still not white, so they were discriminated against. They were still mistreated, but they had wealth to insulate themselves from a lot of that stuff. And many of them had to leave Louisiana because of the pressure before the Civil War, because what the whites were doing, they were saying that free blacks should find a white sponsor for them. So many of those free blacks left. They went to Mexico to live. They went to Haiti, and they left out. But a lot of your free blacks in Louisiana had wealth. They had something to work with. And then after the Civil War, they become your quote-unquote black leaders. They become your civil rights leaders. They become your politicians, you see. And you know, so yeah, the land, the ownership, the black churches. But you should look into a lot of black congregations that have invested in real estate and are providing moderate to low income housing.
Well, I just found the Matoya family. I might do a podcast on them tomorrow.
Make sure you get enough information about them, because it's a lot of. For example, the Matoya family had become, they come from an African woman and a white guy, so they become like this element of blacks, because I come from that too, where they're like light-skinned, and
right,
they kind of insulate themselves to an extent from the larger, darker masses, but they are still classified as Negro. So therefore, they still face discrimination, but the wealth that they have insulates them from a lot of the harshness that the black masses. They also own slaves. They had a plantation, they owned slaves. But they were politically, they became part of advocating for black people. And this is another thing. People point out that blacks who own slaves, but that's a very complex thing. For example, the woman who had these children, she had children before she had children for this white guy. Those children remain slaves.
Right.
Okay? And a lot of times, like with Thomas Jefferson,
had those children with Sally Hemings and all. Them children wasn't free. Sally Hemings wasn't free. She wouldn't give it, you know, so it's complex. It's a very complex thing. But I know Matuyas in New Orleans and all that. That's a very well-known family, the Matuy. In fact, the founder of the Zulu Associated and Pleasure Club, the premier Black Mardi Gras organization, one of the founders was a Matuya. You see?
Mm.
So, and remember, a lot of light-skinned blacks pass for white. They couldn't take – now, think about this, L.A. You look like a white person, but because it's going to be known that you're of African ancestry, you're going to catch hell.
Right.
So many of them chose to pass for white. That means leave and live as a white person and cut themselves off from their family. And we, even in New Orleans, we get calls from the library about some white people doing family research. They found out their great-grandparent was born in Louisiana, New Orleans, and they want to know what the C stands for on the census. You know, C stands for color.
Right, right.
And then it's connected to us some kind of way. A lot of blacks getting these kind of calls in New Orleans, by the way, that they have these whites who found out that their black ancestors from New Orleans and passed for white. It's very interesting. I tell you, it's interesting. You know, so a lot of blacks who look white had to leave and pass. Some of them didn't even come to their own mothers and fathers' funerals because they didn't want it to be discovered. Yeah, there's a lot of stories that a lot of older blacks who are still living could tell you those sad stories about their brother, their sister, or their cousin, or their aunt, or their uncle who left to pass for white and broke ties with the family. Yeah. Mm. There's some still passing today. In fact, I have a cousin. Well, she passes in a way where the white folks she worked with don't know she's black. So she hasn't cut ties with us, but she comes back and tells us all the things the white folks say about black people.
Well, there's a lot of information here on the Matuyer family.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's a lot. Yeah, the Matuyer. Yeah, so read through that stuff thoroughly. But, yeah, they own. So Natchitoches, if you go to Natchitoches today, it's above Alexandria. The river is called Cane River. Cane River is the river. And
yeah,
there was an author, Lolita Tatamy, who wrote a novel called Cane River. Because a lot of the black people that live in that area are these light-skinned blacks that you use the term a lot. That's an old term, a lot, so that term shouldn't be used. But they're light-skinned blacks.
Right.
Many of them look white. Many of them went to California. You know, Louisiana people went to California when they migrated out the south. They went to California. So if you was to go to Los Angeles, the Bay Area, a lot of blacks are going to have some Louisiana connection. Their families came from Louisiana. Even Huey P. Newton, the founder of the Black Panther Party, his parents came from Louisiana.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why he was named Huey P., because his daddy named him after the governor, Huey P. Long.
Oh, boy, Huey P. Long, okay.
Yeah, because many blacks were grateful to Huey P. because he addressed the issue of poverty. He addressed the issue of poor people. Yeah, he got assassinated. And what they found out, the guy that they, and this come out within the last couple of years, the guy that they thought actually shot him, who did go there to kill him possibly, but they realized that it was the state trooper gun may have accidentally killed him. The state, that's what I understand the recent information. But he repeat. Not to get off the subject, but some black people had named their children after that governor because he was a populist government that addressed poverty and poor people, and he believed that Negroes should have something. And so Huey P. Newton of the Black Panther Party, that's who he was named after. But the Matuyer family and other families from that Cane River area are very interesting there. They're very, very interesting.
And Marie Quan Quan, her African name was Quan Quan. And she actually was born in Louisiana when it was a French colony, but her parents actually came from Africa. But her name, Quan Quan, that was her. But her name was Marie Therese Patois. Huh?
I found the Patois. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Her name was Marie Therese Patois. Yeah. She had children, previous children, who were enslaved. And then this white guy, because what these white French men would do, they would always have some kind of black concubine. She had children from him. And it was from her, from that line, that the Matoya family or dynasty is created. And so, there was another free black in South Carolina named Ellison who owned slaves. And what happened to him, the white folk was trying to enslave him. He had to escape. He had to leave.
Mm.
There's an interesting story on him. Because what was happening is free blacks were considered a threat. White people considered free blacks a threat because they felt that blacks who were enslaved would always be inspired by the free blacks to want to be free. So you had laws on the book. You had laws on the book that made it illegal for free blacks and enslaved blacks to congregate together. So you had churches like, there was this AME church in New Orleans where the enslaved and the free blacks would have service together. The police would come and bust them up because they would be thinking that the free blacks would be teaching enslaved blacks about freedom and this kind of stuff. That's a long-going threat. And you know, some of the founding fathers believed that you should send the free blacks away to Liberia so the enslaved blacks wouldn't be infested with this idea of freedom. You know, but look, LA, just email me and I'm going to run out now. But if you're gonna do a show on them twice tomorrow, just let me know. I can call in. You're gonna do it on tomorrow.
Call in because I'm doing a show on them tomorrow. There's a wealth of information just on them alone.
I'll
see you note to that. All right.
Okay. Then.
All right. Thanks a lot. Okay. Let me go back to my studio here. I'm going to just log off for the day.